listening to The Issues of Life with radio therapist and licensed marriage, family, and child counselor, John Jolliffe. Stay with us for 60 minutes of insights into ways we can face up to the challenges of everyday living. Now, here's John.
Hello, everyone. This is John Jolliffe, and welcome to the next issue of life. What is that one thing for which a man is always trying to kill, but what ends up in the end killing him? What is that thing? It's called time, my friends, time. Time is never found. You know, lost time is never found again. You can save it, but you can't bank it, as they always say, time. You know, we've talked a lot about goals and objectives, and I've even got a tape series on planning the rest of your life. But I'll tell you one thing, and that is this, that knowing what to do, having an objective, having a goal, having an ideal, knowing what to do isn't enough if you haven't developed the self-discipline to do it. That's right. Self-discipline is a critical skill that we all need to learn. We're going to talk more about self-discipline in the weeks to come. But you stay on the lines, and let me give you the toll-free number, because I've got a lot to talk to you about today, and you might as well get in line. Toll-free, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. I want to tell you a few more things about discipline, but let's get in line. Let's talk about the things that are important to you on the next issue of life. My name is John Jolliffe. Stay with us. We've got a lot of program left coming up in the next 58 minutes or so. So, lines are open, toll-free, 1-800-447-7837. This is John Jolliffe. You know, we're going to be doing a discipline seminar, learning how to be better disciplined for 95. Right around January, I believe it is, this will be the first announcement of that opportunity. It'll correspond with all of our getting our calendars together for January and the coming year. But, you know, you can have goals, as I was saying in my opening kind of teaser, my commentary, is that you can have goals, you can have objectives, you can have ideals. But, you know, knowing what to do, it just isn't enough if you don't have developed enough self-discipline to do it. All of us, I think, are aware of successful people who had a previous life. They were gamblers, they were thieves, they were liars, they were drunks, and all the things like that. But have you ever met a successful person who wasted their life between 9 and 5? No. You know, people who were able to overcome much in their past, and who isn't an ex-something, who doesn't have something for which they're glad that Christ died for, so that you didn't have to. But people who overcame and who succeeded didn't waste their life between 9 and 5. They had the discipline, the determination to risk for what they wished. You know, with all the anonymous groups that we have for dealing with human frailties and weaknesses and challenges, why is it that we haven't organized to combat the most dangerous, expensive, and self-destructive habit of all? Wasting time. You know, whatever our goals, however we define success, if you blow off your 9-to-5 on useless time-consuming behavior, we're absolutely going to fail. So let me suggest to you to do this, just a little homework assignment from your friendly therapist. Keep track of your time. Keep track of your time. Keeping track of your time is the moral equivalent of a dieter counting calories, except you're monitoring the output instead of the intake. It's an absolute fail-safe method, the only one that there is to ensure success. Keep track of how you use your time. Don't be a time waster. You know, I've been in any number of situations over the last few days in which I'm standing either in line or I'm waiting for something or I'm ordering something, and I look around me, and people are absolutely, in my opinion, wasting their time. Yes, they're just wasting their time. Now, we might say, well, yes, but sitting there and doing nothing might be relaxation. Maybe they do things all day long, and maybe this is just their way of taking a break. Well, I'd like to think so, but I want you to look and see how you use your time. What good is it to have an ideal? What good is it to have a good, healthy, strong mind and body if you're not out accomplishing a purpose or an objective? And if you're wasting your time, you know, you can, as they say, you can save it, but you can't bank it. That's exactly right. Time waits for no man, all right? Okay. Get on the lines. Let's talk about what's going on in your life. Maybe it's not time. Maybe it's something else that we need to be more disciplined in. Toll free, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. It was wonderful to see so many of you out last night as we were talking about power. Isn't it interesting that our subject at our Tuesday night midweek seminars on power came on election night? On election night, the powerful night. Yes, it's wonderful to be able to vote, and it's also wonderful to have an opportunity to discuss, to debate, to challenge ourselves midweek. If you haven't come out to the Tuesday nights at the Holiday Inn in Long Beach, make sure you make a time to do that. We're doing a lot of wonderful things. Next Tuesday, the 15th, next Tuesday, it is the subject of Artful Confrontations. Tickets are $15 at the door at the Holiday Inn in Long Beach. Artful Confrontations. Let's talk to Mark as we begin the program. Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Welcome to The Issues.
Thank you. I was calling because I was listening yesterday, and you had made a comment that I thought kind of struck a nerve for me in a positive way. You had commented that sometimes we expect other people to meet our needs.
Yes.
And sometimes I think I kind of expect my wife to do that because she'll have stress at work or she'll have something that's stressful coming up in her life. And when she comes home, she'll have a tendency to be critical or start to get on my case.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've started dealing with it is I usually try to create kind of a quiet atmosphere when she comes home. I used to really try to smother her as far as with too much affection. And she kind of needed just to have time to come home and decompress. And I think I don't know why it causes so much anxiety in me when she is getting depressed about how things are going on in her life, or if she's taking it out on me.
Well, that's an interesting point because, you know, there are a lot of people, and I was talking a little bit about this last night, there are a lot of people who will function, that will focus in on the event.
Yes.
And this event would be maybe your wife's mood, your wife's depression, your
right.
wife's frustration, whatever's going on with your wife. You could focus in on that. I think the better place to focus is what it's triggering in you, because that event, that mood swing, that lack of happiness in her life that you observe is triggering something in you. The question is what? Because these triggers oftentimes are the vulnerabilities or the unfinished business of our lives, and they have a historic root.
Well,
if you can get to the historic root, you can forget all the stories, you know what I mean?
Well, I used to think, I'm getting better at it, but what you're saying is what she tells me, too. She says you have a tendency to focus on the event, like, for instance, we'll have a great day, and at the end of the day, maybe something will make her angry, and then she'll get really angry, and I've pointed out to her that she sometimes gets angrier than what the event really warrants.
Okay.
And she's gotten a lot better about it. She used to be angry for a very long time.
Well, yes, but see, we have to be careful that we don't have some mixed objectives here. Are you trying to help her with her moods and feelings?
That's what I do.
Or are you trying to understand why you're so, I don't know what. What would you say?
Well, I have a tendency to try to make things better for her.
Yes, but what I'm asking you to look at is why it's so disturbing that your wife becomes disturbed. Is it out of love for her that you're so concerned? Or is it out of a fear in you?
Fear.
Okay, then, I mean, you might be doing both. You might be both afraid and love her, but I'm asking you for what's going on with you. So it triggers some kind of fear in you when your wife is unhappy.
Right.
Okay, what does it represent?
I think I've told her that I'm afraid that she's going to leave.
Okay, very good. You see, we're getting down through all of these layers, aren't we?
Uh-huh.
You're afraid she's going to leave you.
Right.
There's another layer below that. If she leaves you...
Oh, if she leaves me, then I'll have to deal with life by myself.
Okay, and why is that so difficult? Why is that so frightening?
I think because in the past I've had just a hard time, you know, probably because I don't feel confident to be able to do things by myself.
Okay, so there's a dependency in you.
Yes.
And that dependency shows up in your fears. And the fear is that she might reject you or abandon you. She might kill herself. She might die. She might run away. And the larger truth is that if she does, your life is over, because you're dependent on her.
Right.
And that says that you have little confidence in you.
Right.
And there's a historic root to that.
Probably, if I was going to say there's on the historic root, probably because the only thing I can think of is my dad used to berate us and tell us that we weren't doing a good job at whatever we did. We could never measure up.
All right. And one of the things I said last night, remember this, anybody listening for the first time, let me say this. When I talk about families of origin, we are not blaming anybody.
Right.
We're not blaming your father. We're not blaming your mother. We're not blaming your family. But we are saying that that 18 or so many years in that family is a very powerful place. And whatever frustrations and whatever difficulties and challenges that each one of us face, although they may differ, they are probably in the same area, and it regards and revolves around the family, that those experiences that we have not successfully resolved or worked through warp us. They shape us. And the reasons we take certain risks or we don't take certain risks, the reason we choose one thing over another, has to do with that unfinished business. And so it's important for us to connect up. And one of the things that happens in childhood is that we're exposed to certain challenges before we have the wisdom and the insight to be able to navigate through these things. And the saddest truth is that we draw conclusions before we really are capable of making those decisions. We draw conclusions about ourselves. You see what I mean? I want to say a couple more things about that, so stay with me, all right? My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in just a minute with this issue of life.
Are you growing up or just growing old? Real maturity is a lifelong process, and unless we want to run the risk of short-circuiting that process, we need to be committed to the truth about ourselves. That's why John Jolliffe has put together a 2-cassette motivational tape series called The Theater of Truth. It's a frontal assault on reality that'll equip you to deal with issues like perfectionism, boredom, rebellion, divorce, and personal integrity. You'll come away with a deeper understanding of why you are who you are. The Theater of Truth. Available from The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or for faster service, call 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your Visa or MasterCard ready. Again, that address is Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Our phone number is 1-800-447-7837.
John Jolliffe, and I'm talking to Mark. Mark, this is John.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was saying just as we went to commercial break is that unfortunately it is one of those options and opportunities that we're granted, and that is that as a young child we are placed in situations where we oftentimes draw conclusions that I call confusions. We draw conclusions at a time that we really don't have the experience to do it truthfully. And therefore, we wind up with a reputation, we wind up with a conclusion that may not be the truest truth. That's why you oftentimes hear me talking about the truth versus the truest truth. The other thing that we do, unfortunately, as young children, is that we take on the problems of other people. One of the things that you said in one of the conclusions I think you reached was that you were not adequate, you were not competent to take care of yourself. Therefore, your relationships will have a needy, desperate quality to it.
Right.
Now, the truth is that you were enough. Now, you may not have been enough to get your father to understand something, or to make him a better parent, or to keep your parents' marriage together, or keep him sober, or whatever other challenge you had to face. But the point is, you were adequate enough to just live and discover yourself and become yourself. But you weren't enough to face and have to overcome some of the challenges you had to face.
Right.
So you wound up with a conclusion or a reputation with yourself that you weren't competent and capable. You took on the problems of other people, and typically children do that.
Right.
Because they are threatened by the problems they see in their parents. They take on the problem so that they can continue to look at their parents with trust and respect and to idealize them.
That's what I do with her.
Yes, you idealize the people that you see are troubled. And therefore, it means that you incorporate or take on to yourself their responsibilities and their problems.
That's what I do.
And so therefore, you don't feel any more adequate to help your wife than you felt adequate to help your father.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Now that you mention it, I do that.
Okay. And I would think that in some sense, she would be upset with you because she knows that these are her problems and only she can face whatever challenges she has to. And she gets upset, and she gets upset with you in the sense that she's not free just to have a problem because it threatens you so much.
Right. She's kind of said that before.
Yeah, of course she would. I mean, if I have a problem, I want it to be my problem, thank you very much, and I don't want anybody to take on the challenge or feel that they're at fault or they're to blame. I want to have a bad day every once in a while. I earned it. Let me have it. Do you know what I mean? Okay, but your job is, and all of our jobs, when we can either focus on the triggering event, or we can focus on what that triggers in us, and track it back to its historical root, and then deal with that historical root. So the next time something happens with your wife, you can immediately understand why it seems to be so threatening. It is not the present moment that's so threatening, it is what it reminds you of as a child. Okay, my friend?
Okay.
Continue your work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
You know, again, this work that we're doing is no substitute for counseling, for therapy, for, you know, personal growth. But it is another opportunity to kind of point the way, to give you a direction in terms of where the work maybe needs to be done. Okay? We're going to take to Dina. Dina has to go pick up her kids, right, Dina?
Uh-huh.
So we're going to get your call in.
Okay.
I've got this Richard Burton voice today. I don't know what happened.
It's just so incredible I was able to get through to you.
Yes, good. How can I help you?
Just a second. I'm feeling so much pressure. I've gone through a series of major crisis events in my life, and
what are you doing right now that you're saying, can you wait a minute?
I made my little 4-year-old daughter go away.
Okay.
So I could talk for a second.
That's right.
But I for the last 4 years, I guess I was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 6 months pregnant with her.
Uh-huh.
And since then, we've also been missionaries in Mexico and back and forth, and we're home now because I've been sick, and I've been sick over and over again. But what I guess I'm getting to is that I've been left with a medication problem, and
a medication problem?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I have to have medication in order to function.
Okay, but why is that a medication problem?
Because my conscience doesn't allow it.
Okay, you have a conscience problem.
I have a conscience problem.
Yeah, the medication works.
The medication works.
But your conscience doesn't allow the medication to work because you don't take it.
Well, I take it because I have to take it to feel stable, but
And what kind of medication is this?
I'd rather not say.
Oh, okay.
At the moment. But
is it for your breast cancer or for your emotional?
It's both. It's been both. I've been through a series of surgeries, and my daughter just this last weekend had an emergency appendectomy, and it feels like I don't know if I'm teetering here on sanity or.
Okay. Okay. So your conscience doesn't allow you to take the medication?
That seems to be the major pressure.
Okay. What? Tell me what the pressure is. What does taking medication represent to you?
An addict.
An addict?
Yeah.
Addicts, it's very, very rare. Can you hear this?
Yes.
It's very, very rare that someone becomes addicted to prescription medication. It happens.
It happens.
But it's rare. The word addict is usually reserved for illegal drugs.
Okay.
Okay. Now, does that make a difference?
That's helpful.
Now, how is it helpful?
Just because I've never been addicted to anything in my 30 years of life.
Yes.
And I have to say I'm addicted. I'm addicted to some medication. The doctors have said it, and it looks as though I'm going to have to go through rehab on top of all of the other things that I've gone through.
And what kind of, are you willing to talk about what kind of medication you tend to be addicted to?
Pain medication.
Okay.
And Xanax.
Okay.
because the anxiety is, the pressures are, I don't know if I'm...
Okay. I understand.
Ready to take my life or not anymore.
Okay. Are you seeing somebody now?
Yeah, I am. I'm trying to anyway. I'm in a therapy group, breast cancer, and I'm seeing a social worker and a psychiatrist who just prescribes medication, doesn't do any counseling.
So are you getting any individualized care?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a minister's wife.
What does that mean?
That means a lot. That means that I can't use the church. I know that you can't. Can you connect the two? To me, it's.
You can't use the church. What does that mean? You can't use the church.
I can't. It's like a. I don't know. I just feel like an alcoholic, but it's not alcohol.
Okay. So what you're doing? Well, you know, this is a very good call. This is very important stuff. That you're dealing with here. Now. Is your husband afraid
husband's completely supportive. He doesn't.
He's not afraid of his reputation being tarnished because you're on medication?
No.
Would his reputation be tarnished if you availed yourself to ministers and people of the church for help and support?
No.
Okay. So this is something you think that you have to do.
My ethical standard.
No, it's not ethical. It's more neurotic, okay?
Why is it neurotic?
Because it's not really reality based stuff. Now, if your husband was saying, "Look, my ego and my reputation are on the line here. You can't have a problem," then that would be reality based. But in this sense, your husband is supportive. He's saying, look, if you've got a problem, let's deal with it. Let's get the help wherever we can afford it and whatever we can avail ourselves to it. And you're saying, no, we can't do that.
Well, I guess...
I can't have a problem. I can't take medication. And if I do any of these things, it proves something about myself.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. I spent... my life trying to be an ethical person, and to me it's just...
But this is not about ethics.
It's beyond my conscience.
If you could give me a history lesson of your ethics, would we track them back to family?
Yeah.
And would we find that either you came from a teetotaling family that denied a certain reality, or would we find, let's see, what was I going to say... that in some way, either a father or mother or marriage was not very ethical?
No, it was just a good, hard-working mother, and that's it.
Okay.
With high standards and ethics and just honest living, that's
all. Where was your father?
Dead. He died when I was six, and he died of alcohol, but he didn't have an impact on my life because I was too young. My mother was...
And how many children?
I have three children.
Uh-huh. And was he an alcoholic throughout their relationship?
No, I'm sorry. My father died when I was a child.
Yeah,
so
I hear.
He didn't impact my life.
Don't be so convinced. Was he an alcoholic during his relationship with his wife?
Yes.
And how many years were they married before he died?
Probably five at the most. He died when I was five. My sister was six.
No, I understand. I want to talk a little bit longer on this subject. Would you stay with me?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in just a minute to understand the absences of life. This is John Jolliffe, and we've been talking to Dina. Dina's 35 years old, and she is the mother of two, is that right, Dina?
Three.
Ages, what are the ages?
11, 8, and 4.
11, 8, and 4. She feels a tremendous amount of pressure and stress. She was raised by a mother who became a single parent of two children, is that right?
Right.
And her father was an alcoholic who died when she was five, is that right?
Right.
And you made the comment, and I just want to pass over this if just to make a comment about it, and that is that you don't feel, because your father died at 5 years old, that he had much of an impact in your life. The only comment I want to make to you is twofold. One is that we are as affected and shaped by the absent parents as we are the ones who are present. The ones who die, the ones who desert us, the ones who just kind of disappear, or the passive ones, shape and mold our existence just as much as the angry, expressive, verbally abusive ones, okay? And the fact that your mother was married to an alcoholic who abused her, physically, if not verbally, abused your mother for the years prior to your birth, and the fact that your father force-fed you alcohol and abused you with alcohol and had to be restrained also is an impact. And the fact that your mother had a hot temper, that she also was stressed and had a lot of pressure in her life and would fly off the handle, also impacts you, and she died. She died at the birth of your first child.
Right.
Then you had two miscarriages, breast cancer, and now panic attacks. The thing that I think you need to talk about in your breast cancer group, support group, whatever they are, what you need to talk about is the either lack of training or the difficulty you have with talking about and admitting your fears and difficulties. You may have a list of things, because I, in talking with you about your father, it seemed very apparent to me, in fact, as you even stated it, that you did not want to talk about your father. You didn't think it was relevant.
Right.
You may have a list of things that you don't think are relevant.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a list of things that you disguise under the title of ethics, of morals, of whatever other kinds of things. But they become a larger, growing list of things that need to be discussed, they need to be processed, because the panic attacks that you're in medication for, the panic attacks tell you that you're having a breakout. We don't have a breakdown, we have a breakout. And the things that we have parked and repressed and depressed in our lives eventually will leak out at some point, and they usually do it when we're least prepared to deal with it. So when the defenses are starting to break down, you start having panic attacks. And what I want you to do is I want you to talk. I want you to talk more. It would be wonderful if you could get into individual therapy, but even use your support groups to talk far more and take risks. You know, one of the things that if you want to be free, okay, and who doesn't, from these troubles, if we want to be free, we must talk about what constrains us. It's a paradox, but you must talk about the things that control you. That's the only way to gain control over them. Everything we can't talk about, shouldn't talk about, or ethically think is incorrect to talk about, any of the help that we think we can't get because we're ministers or ministers' wives or therapist wives or whoever we are, everything that we avoid makes us weak.
That's why I brought up the medication, because I think that's what it, I feel like that's what's controlling my life.
Well, it may or may not be. I think what's controlling your life is the reason you need medication. Medication can be a real godsend. It can be of great benefit to us. It's not going to heal it. It's not going to resolve anything, but it's going to help us to be able to sit down long enough so that we can talk out with people who are trained and can help us. Medication will help you sit down, calm you down enough so that we can get to the issues and the problems of life. Okay?
Yeah.
Panic is merely a symptom of a problem. It's not the problem.
Right.
So we got to get underneath the panic and talk about that, and you can't get underneath the panic if you're bouncing off the walls because of this anxiety.
Right.
Okay? So get into some individual therapy and talk a whole lot more in your group therapy, not about the breast cancer, not about cancer, but about the fact that you can't talk about the cancer because it may be just one of many things that you really have a hard time really opening up on. Stay in line, okay? We'll give you a good referral.
Thank you.
You're sure welcome.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for calling. And it's so important. I hope all of you got something out of that, because my voice is going. I don't know where my voice is going, but it's going. You're keeping me up too late on Tuesday nights. That's what's happening. Everything that you can't talk about weakens you. Everything you avoid, you empower. It gets empowered. You want to be powerful? Face every truth. Face off with your fears and discuss it and talk about it. It's one of the paradoxes of life. If you want to be free of what troubles you, you have to talk about what constrains you. Rules, ethics, morals, Christianity, any of those kinds of things that doesn't give you an openness to talk cripples you in one way or another. Karen, what do you think?
Hello?
Yeah, Karen, what do you think?
I agree.
Yep. Okay. So what is it?
Well, I've been separated for about 6 weeks from my husband.
Okay, I need you to speak up, all right?
I've been separated for about 6 weeks from my husband.
Okay.
We were separated also about 15 years ago. He had had an affair at that time.
How long, 15 years ago?
Yes.
How long?
I think it was for about 2 months or so.
Okay.
And at the time, I had two small boys. One was only about a year old at the time.
Okay.
And
recently separated how long ago?
Pardon me?
You separated just recently?
Yes.
How long ago?
About 6 weeks.
6 weeks ago. Did you get a separation agreement?
No.
Why did you separate?
Well, we started having a lot of trouble shortly after the earthquake with our teenage son. He's been in some real serious problems, and it's put a lot of added stress on the marriage, not that we didn't have problems already to begin with.
Is the son expressing the problems that exist in the family?
No.
Or is this totally independent? His problems are totally independent of whatever's gone on in the family?
Well, they're independent. I mean, they don't seem to have anything to do with it, although, I don't know, ultimately, subconsciously or something, maybe they're affecting him in some way.
Well, is his father there to talk through the difficulties that the son is having?
You mean with the...
Can your husband, his father, sit down with him and talk about the challenges that he's facing, the problems that the son is having?
He's living with his father right now.
But that doesn't mean they can sit down and talk.
Well, neither one of them are communicators.
Okay, then he's not communicating with his son. He's not able to sit down with his son, and his father's not... The child does not go to his father and get help.
My husband has tried to talk to him a little bit. He's gotten a little bit better.
Your husband has gotten better?
Yeah, my husband has gotten better, and once in a while he will have talks with him.
Which means your son is getting a little more help.
I don't know. I mean, we were all in counseling for a while, but we're not now.
Okay,
I'm in counseling, but they are not.
And when are you going to reconcile with your husband?
Well, I don't know if I should, because we've had such serious problems, and...
How will you know if you should?
That's what I'm calling you about. I'm just so confused right now. It seems like I just don't feel like my husband has had respect for me. I have never gotten any support from him in dealing with the kids over the years, which I think a lot of the problems we're having with our son is because I've never been supported or backed up. You know, if I say something, my son acts like he doesn't respect me and doesn't do what I ask him to do. And my
does your son, growing up, did your son see your husband disrespect you?
Yes.
Therefore, he thinks that anything he wants to do, he can get away with it because he's not going to respect what you say.
Exactly.
Any limits you put on him, he's not going to respect you any more than his father did.
Right.
And since you tolerate the disrespect of your husband, he expects that you will tolerate and he'll get away with disrespect.
I guess that would be it. Because my husband has not backed me up. In fact, many times...
But you haven't, and I'm sensitive to that, but I just want to make the point. You can't wait for your husband to back you up. You have to learn to back yourself up. One of the things that your son saw was your husband's disrespect. But the other thing he saw, which may be even more powerful, is the fact you didn't back yourself up. If he had seen you treat your husband and stand up to your husband and not accept or respect the way your husband disrespected you and the children, if he had seen you back yourself up and not tolerate that kind of thing, he might have a different expectation when he came to violating you.
Well, how do you... When the husband is not supporting me, let's say, and I feel like I'm not getting the respect or the support that I deserve, how can you force somebody to give you that?
You can't.
I don't understand what you're telling me that I should be doing.
Well, is there any cause and effect? Is there any natural logical consequence to being disrespected? I mean, he disrespects you, so what?
The only thing that I could think of was maybe I should have walked out on him years ago.
Well, that's
one.
That's one natural thing. I mean, if you don't show up to work, guess what? You're fired.
Right.
You see? That's where an employer backs themselves up. The employer can't be afraid of a lawsuit or wrongful termination or all those kinds of things that make employers weak. And it's one of the problems with our country. We've become so weak, the criminals have more power than the victims. You know, we're looking after the understudies. We're looking after everybody else instead of looking after ourselves. You know, that's one of the things on November 22nd, at our Tuesday night, I'm going to talk about neglect, the quiet side of self-abuse. I think that one of the bigger problems is the fact that your son did not see you back yourself up. And obviously, one of the problems you had with backing yourself up is that you don't understand what that means.
What do you mean by not backing myself up?
That's my whole point. You don't understand what that means. So let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk about backing ourselves up, okay? My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in just a minute.
With every opportunity comes that little argument inside. Should I take a chance or play it safe? Cut my losses or put everything on the line? No matter how bright our prospects, our hidden fears fight against us, and often we don't even know what's happening. In John Jolliffe's motivational two-cassette series, Failing Your Way to Your Potential Best, you'll learn to uncover the hidden fears that keep you from risking success and learn to turn past shortcomings into springboards. Failing Your Way to Your Potential Best, just $14.95 from The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or if you prefer to use your Visa or MasterCard, call 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your credit card ready. Again, that's The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. That phone number is 1-800-447-7837.
John Jolliffe, if you have a comment to make to Karen in terms of backing yourself up, why don't you give us a call, toll-free, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. If you have an experience with that kind of thing where you understand what backing yourself up is, why don't you give Karen a call right now here on the program? We'll put you on and give her a piece of advice. Karen, you're on the line with me?
Yes.
Okay, Karen. It's interesting, as I was talking to you off the air, you told me a number of things that, in a sense, didn't permit you to back yourself up, give yourself the needed and added confidence that you needed. You said certain things like this. You gave me some experiences or examples of where he would undermine your authority with the children. There would be an agreed-upon time to go to bed. The children would be watching television. You'd say, it's bedtime. He would say, oh, listen, he started the program. Let him finish it. There would be other things that would happen, and your husband would say, well, what makes your opinion right? You know, and so, therefore, things that you supposedly had agreed upon, he plays out whatever his drama is in undermining your authority with the children. Then you said, he always looks like the good guy, and I look like the bad guy. Because he's giving them what they want, and therefore, he wins and I lose. If you think that way, then you're not going to be able to back yourself up. You're not going to have the added confidence that you need. You said also, in front of the children, you have to look supportive. You've got to look like a team. And since he wants to argue in front of the children, and I don't think the parents should argue in front of the children, for years I didn't argue back. Only later did you start standing up for yourself. If he's going to argue, then I'm going to argue back as well. I don't think it's such a terrible thing to see parents confronting each other in front of the children. It just depends upon how you do it. And if you're doing it in a much kinder and respectful manner than your husband is, point that out in the confrontation between the two of you, so that the child can focus in on how to do a ethical, a moral confrontation. Also, say things like, what is our understanding regarding the watching of television and curfew and bedtime? What is our understanding? If he doesn't have an understanding, then you come up with an understanding. You say such things as, well, would you agree at 9 o'clock? Or whatever the time is. Get an agreement. Therefore, you say to the children, you can see the kind of difficulty that your father and I have. You know the kind of tension that this creates, and I expect that you'll be as responsible for your bedtime as I'm trying to help you become responsible. But we don't want to have these kinds of conflicts because, quite frankly, I'm not willing to continue beating myself up or beating my head against the wall to do the right thing in terms of what we've agreed. And you said that 15 years ago he had an affair. That's why you split up or you separated. You said also 5 years ago you got an anonymous letter 6 months after that in which you got another anonymous letter that said he was having an affair. And you also think he's having an affair now. You don't back yourself up and give your sense of self a strength by continuing to tolerate the undermining and the disrespect. At some point, your children, and if I interviewed your children, they might have said, I don't know why my mother didn't leave him sooner. So there's a sense in which the fears that you have about separation or whatever that means to you, you said that you were an adoptive child and family may mean a whole lot to you and fathers for children may mean a whole lot for you because you had a close relationship with your father. You may have any number of reasons that weaken your resolve so that you can't really be there for yourself to back yourself up, to hold people accountable and send the message to them that they're going to pay a price for their disrespect. It's not going to be business as usual if we can't find a mutual ground where we can mutually respect each other. You see what I'm saying? So we have to look into our lives to see where our philosophies, our attitudes, what we call morals and things like that, really weaken us. You see what I mean?
My children don't know anything about the affairs, and I don't think they would have the attitude that I should have left him years ago.
Well, if they knew the truth, they would.
Well, and I've
Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah,
if they knew that he had cheated on you at least twice, if not three times, I think that would probably change their attitude towards him.
I don't know if they would or not. And
well, okay.
I've asked my counselor if. I've asked my counselor if he thinks my children should know what's been going on, and he said no, he doesn't think that I should tell them.
Well,
how do you feel about that?
Well, all I'm telling you is that you know enough to take action in terms of this kind of thing so that you respect your own actions. And staying with a relationship that continues to throw the marriage away, that continues to disrespect and undermine your authority with the children, is certainly not a relationship that I would want to maintain. We either get help, we get it corrected, or we move on. That doesn't mean necessarily divorce, but I certainly wouldn't want to live with somebody who continues to undermine and disrespect me and is having perhaps an ongoing affair or has a pattern of that.
Well, that's where we're at now. I really don't want to get back together, and I'm to the point now as a Christian, I don't know if I should just to protect myself financially and so forth, if I should make a legal separation or what?
I think you need to get a good attorney, and I think you need to send a signal to everybody who's listening that this kind of disrespect, this kind of immorality will not be tolerated by you. And if people want to get serious about the trouble and the problems they're having and learn to respect each other, then fine, we're open to that. But we're not going to reconcile before that is accomplished. It's not going to continue to be business as usual. You've got to get people who can support that so that you can back yourself up. It happens all the time, but we need to back ourselves up. Stand with me, okay? I want to give you some feedback from Ellen. Will you stay on the line? Okay, let's see if we can get Ellen on the line. Ellen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hold on a second.
Okay.
Yeah, Karen?
Yes.
Are you still there?
Uh-huh.
Hold on 1 second. Let's see if I can get Karen. Ellen?
Yes.
Okay. Can you hear Karen?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead. Ellen, you've got some feedback for Karen.
Okay. This is the lady that is on the line right now.
I can barely hear her.
Okay. You've got to speak up, Ellen.
This is the lady that is on right now?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I understand a lot of the things that you've been through, Karen. My children are with their father right now, and he has been living that kind of a life for a long time. And he told me he didn't care if I lived that way, too. So I don't believe it's right that I gave up my kids to be with him.
I
don't know
what
more I can tell you. But
so the advice you would have for Karen, Ellen, is don't give up your children.
Don't give up your children.
Don't compromise what you need and want.
That's right.
Just for some form or some semblance of family.
That's right.
Okay.
Because your children know the truth. You can't keep the truth from your children. They really know what's going on in your life.
Okay. And I think also we would probably say that, hold on a second. I think we would also say that your children need to understand why the difficulty. You don't have to get into the details. But I certainly would suggest when you're separating, don't look like the fall guy. You suggest that there are problems in relationships with commitments of marriage, and there has been unfaithfulness, and I just can't be a party to it, and that's why your father and I are separating. I admit to my failure. Your father may admit to his failure, but I need to be honest. We need to be honest with each other. There's things that I've tolerated that I no longer will tolerate from your father nor for you. So we either get our acts together or we're not together. Your son is how old?
My youngest one is 17, and I have a 26-year-old also.
Okay. And remember, what I've always said is that children are raised so that 24 hours after they graduate from high school, they go on their own. If they can't because they want to go to college or other things, then what you do is by mutual consent, you extend childhood. But there's no necessity for that.
The Issues of Life is a presentation of the Issues of Life Foundation, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801.